Welcome to the Reimagine Mobility Podcast Series. I'm here with Ashley Taylor. Ashley, thank you for joining us. You are in a segment in the mobility space that is changing, obviously, as well. And that's, let's call it maybe headhunting and recruiting, right? It's the human capital of the mobility side. And maybe introduce yourself first. Tell us a little bit what you're doing today. And then let's jump in and from your perspective, reimagine mobility together here a little bit.
Awesome. Well, thank you. First off, just thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to get to talk with you today. So yeah, so for a little context about me, I started as a recruiter in the transportation, automotive, mobility space. And I quickly evolved into doing more sales and working with automotive OEMs and suppliers and helping them from a workforce augmentation standpoint. So it was an amazing opportunity. I got to work with companies, you know, big companies like Honda here in the Columbus, Ohio area. And then I got to jump into and work with a lot of the EV sector. And I fell in love. I got, you know, to work with Rivian and Lucid and Canoo and all the, you know, some other ones that are maybe not around anymore, but just fell in love with that space. So yeah, so I, about a year ago, I opened up my own company. I saw a gap in the market for really workforce development consulting and talent strategy for a lot of these people. It's a competitive market, especially with some of these engineering, you know, and specialized engineering roles. So I got to open up my own company and help consult in that. Which has been wonderful. So we do talent strategy, but we also do some routine search as well. So it's been super fun. And then in that kind of grew a need from a job seeker's perspective on helping to coach and help job seekers find positions as well. So I find in my two companies, I have Green Tech Resources and I have Charged Up Careers, and people get confused by that sometimes, but they work very harmoniously together. Because I know what companies are looking for and I know what job seekers are looking for. So it's like a very good symbiotic relationship.
Very good. Very good. I looked actually at your LinkedIn profile and the different things you're sharing there. Very interesting. And for somebody who hasn't done his resume in quite a while, I definitely learned a few things that I may have to change on my resume. But Ashley, when we look at, and you just talked about, right, the EV space and how fast we've grown, certainly in this country, how fast growing, but also in a very short period of time. So both fast in both respects. When you look back of what just happened and when you now look forward, now that suddenly over the last 6 months, maybe more of a more tampered growth or tampered forecast with EVs is coming in, and sort of now the discussion about, well, maybe hybrids and plug-in hybrids aren't so bad. Some people put this in the ICE space, some people put this in the electrification space or EV space. What do you see changing with people going forward? Are people going back to the ICE again, where somewhat over the last several years they maybe wanted to flee that area? Are people saying this is just temporary? But what do you see from companies you work with? What do you see from people seeking new employment, a change of employment? Share a little bit that as we, again, reimagine mobility and sort of looking into the future.
Yeah, I think there are multiple, you know, ways to kind of answer that question in regards to, you know, ICE versus hybrid versus EV. You know, everybody's, you know, Toyota just, you know, kind of announced their strategy. So I do think from a job seeker perspective, there is a little bit of hesitancy in going back to the ICE. You know, there are people that are currently in that space and they're a little bit worried about, like, what does my future really look like? And so, you know, I talk with a lot of those, you know, job seekers or people in those roles, you know, about leveraging transferable skills and how we can start. You know, it's not about taking a jump right away. It's about, you know, creating intentional action and intentional strategy as far as building those skill sets to, as the need evolves, you know, so they're kind of going that direction as well. So I think that in general, yes, I don't see a ton of, you know, ICE is not going away anytime soon. It really isn't. But I do think that most job seekers are cognizant that they need to be evolving with the industry as well.
And then when we take that topic, which is more, I would say, over the last few months or maybe years become a topic, this division between EV-driven, ICE-driven, but the topic of onshore versus offshore, right? That's been an ongoing, I would say, a roller coaster. Some 2 years, it's a big thing. A couple of years, it's a bad thing, or it's something we're not pursuing. And then it comes again, comes and goes, right? I call it a roller coaster. What do you think, again, looking forward, we're seeing when it comes to on and offshore?
Yeah, for sure. So I find, you know, a few years back, maybe 2019 or whatever, everybody was holding their cards, always holding their cards real close to their chest, not wanting to offshore much, not wanting to, you know, they really wanted to keep all that proprietary information very internal. What I see now is I don't know if it's a little bit of COVID, but it's also just, you know, the rebalancing of, you know, workforce internally in organizations. But I am seeing a huge of more tolerance for outsourcing. So, you know, I'm talking with these, you know, individuals who are looking to propel their careers forward. And we talk a lot about engineering services companies and, you know, the opportunity that is there nowadays that potentially, you know, maybe people never really considered working for an engineering services company because, you know, they thought it was fancier to work for the OEM. But now they're seeing these layoffs and, you know, these services companies are a lot more attractive because, you know, if a project ends, generally there's multiple projects going on and you can reallocate that workforce. So right now I'm seeing a really big, you know, tolerance for OEMs to either use engineering services companies, either nearshore or offshore, or a lot of times a combination of both. And then also outsourcing, you know, more giving the suppliers a lot more responsibility as well. I'm seeing that a lot.
If we stay with that for a moment, what do you see the OEMs doing in the next couple of years? Right now, over the last year, we've seen the big three in the U.S. reduce their staff significantly, right, through voluntary layoffs, voluntary retirements, through some layoffs, incentivized packages for them to leave. Is this a temporary thing to reduce costs because of the sheer amount of money they have to spend on the EV side, on bringing that up to speed? Is it market-driven that suddenly price pressures and not necessarily increasing number of volumes of vehicles sold is pinching them? Is this a temporary thing? What do you see the trend when you talk from your perspective and your position to the OEMs and to people that may come from them to you to find the talent that they need?
Yeah, I think that a lot of it, I mean, it is a lot of cost-driven, right? At the end of the day, they are, you know, OEMs are, they got, you know, got to make money. They are accountable to their stakeholders. So I think that there's going to be this, I think there was a lot of overhiring, you know, there really was a lot of overhiring because of the excitement of all the new technology. So there's a lot of, like I said, rebalancing in that. So I think that it's starting to level off. I do see that. I mean, I'm not saying there's not going to be any more layoffs or things like that. I'm sure there's more to come. But I do think that things are going to kind of simmer down a little bit. Things are going to get rebalanced. We're going to find this flow of what we were just talking about, leveraging, you know, the outsourced companies and also their internal resources and finding that kind of, that flow together.
When we then take let's stay with the human capital, right? The worker, key for, I would say, probably most of the companies and maybe all companies in the world, if you really get down to it. But what do you see going forward is the most important thing for the human capital development? Is it finding the right talent that I can then mix up with experienced people, with maybe even AI that's just around the corner to really be on a daily basis part of our tool set that we use? Is it using internal resources? We talked the ICE before, that we take from the ICE side and move it into the maybe autonomous side, move it into the EV side. So it's a sort of an upskilling, a retraining. What do you see going forward? Not necessarily what happened in the past, but what do you see going forward are larger companies doing with their human capital?
You hit the nail on the head there. I think that the power is in upskilling and leveraging transferable skills. So, you know, there's in the market right now, there's no longer really those people that are, you know, going to be at a company for 30 years. You know, there's a lot of people looking for other opportunities. And there's a big emphasis right now on keeping that talent internal. So how do you do that? You do that through upskilling. You do that through taking maybe those ICE individuals, looking at the skill sets that they have and seeing, okay, how can we upskill that to now help, you know, maybe it's in the battery manufacturing. They have that, you know, that somewhat of that knowledge. So I think that that's really, really key for organizations to be looking at their current employees and thinking, okay, these people might be a little bit nervous. How can we invest in them in training to, you know, get them to their next level? So I think we're going to be seeing that more and more. There's already, you know, I know there's Bosch has a great upskilling, you know, program within it. Most of the companies do, but I think we're going to see that even accentuated even more so.
So would it be fair then to say that an HR organization within any firm is transitioning more to become also a training center instead of just taking care of the human resources in general, the well-being and whatnot, and more also into sort of almost like an internal university sort of thing?
I've seen it both ways, to be honest with you. I've seen it internal. I also see, though, organizations leveraging local universities and local partnerships around to upskill as well. I know that here in Ohio, there are quite a few community colleges that are, you know, specifically putting together battery upskilling programs where organizations can then send their current people through these trainings to upskill them. So if they were potentially at a engine plant, you know, sending them to this upskilling training for a couple months, so then they can move into the battery manufacturing plant. And I think, you know, we're going to see a little bit of both. It's very expensive for an organization to completely put together their own university, if you will. So I think leveraging these external partners and these external organizations are going to be key.
How much of that, and that's the last question on that topic, how much of that do you see the government playing a role? So this private-public partnership, I know there's public university and private university, so let's leave that away for a moment, but how much is the government playing into this and how much are companies going forward again as we look forward, as we reimagine this whole industry? Is government going to play a bigger role or is it sort of staying the way it is right now?
I'm seeing actually the government giving a lot of grants to organizations to invest in their people. I think it's up to the organizations, though, to see what's out there. I think that sometimes, you know, I talk with different companies and they don't know what they don't know. They don't know that there's, you know, grants out there that, you know, they can use to invest in their own associates. So I do see that there is that government help that's out there. You just need to know to look for it and how to use it.
Ashley, over the years, ever since I got into this industry 25 plus years ago, we always talked about blue collar workers and white collar workers, right? Sort of this description, labeling, whatever you want to call it, not in any role negative or whatever, but the distinction of two different types of jobs. Is this still accurate or is there a third or a fourth that we should add as we go forward? I mean, back when I started again in the industry, AI, I don't remember that ever being a topic. Autonomous, I think we've talked about it sort of in a sci-fi way. EVs, we sort of laughed at some of the early adopters of doing it and how it failed and it will never happen. And here we are today. But is this still the right way of looking at the workforce going forward? Or are there other descriptors or other type of areas that have evolved over the last years or will evolve going forward?
Yes, great question. Okay, so, you know, when you look at the types of jobs that are going to be needed to, you know, fuel, you know, the upcoming development of cell manufacturing, of battery manufacturing, battery recycling, there's this new, a bigger skill set that's needed. And what I'm seeing in the industry, I didn't name this to myself, but calling green collar jobs. So we're talking like not necessarily the assembly line workers, but maybe a little bit more that have a skilled trade. So, you know, maybe it's the electricians, it's the maintenance workers, it's the PLC programmers. these are going to be really, really essential jobs to be able to do the manufacturing that we need to get done to go forward.
And when we look at going forward in this whole industry, again, specifically the human capital, let's leave it, I think, at that topic. When you look at companies and you compare them with whatever the past 5 or 10 years, what that you have insight into this space, what are the things that you will say, companies, you got to start thinking differently about people. You got to start thinking about, you know, blue collar workers, white collar workers, green collar workers in a different perspective with a different outlook going forward. What would that be, if anything? But I assume you would have some things you would say, guys, you got to start looking at your human capital in a different way, or start planning for different ways to develop them, like we talked before, the upskilling. What would it be if you look back and also forward at the same time?
Yeah, you know, it's been a weird 4 years, right? With, you know, everything that's gone on in the market and the world. And, you know, from a company perspective, there used to be this stigma around job hopping, right? You know, I worked with, you know, engineering managers or whatever, and they're like, oh no, this person's had, you know, 3 jobs that they've only been there for 2 years. You know, I don't want a job hopper. I don't want only somebody who's going to be there for 2 or 3 years. And, you know, I think that moving forward, we're going to see, there needs to be a big, better tolerance for people that have maybe shorter durations on their resumes for multiple reasons. One, in general, we need to have more empathy. You know, it was a weird world that we were living in. You know, there were decisions that people had to make that maybe they had to take a job that wasn't necessarily their ideal job, but, you know, you got to put food on the table. We got to be empathetic to that. And then they got one that was their ideal job, but then they got laid off. You know, we don't know the stories that are behind people's resumes. And from a organizational standpoint, we need to have a little bit more of a tolerance for that. I will also say, just what we talked about earlier, from an organizational perspective, we need to be doing a better job to retain our people. We need to develop our people. So having those, you know, career paths in place and knowing what people need, people want to know what they need to do to get to the next level. So having that very clear and very articulated for those people, so they don't go on the market again and start looking again. From a job seeker perspective, there also needs to be a little bit more of a give and take too. You have your cake and eat it too. Maybe when there was the big tech boom with all the people, you know, everybody's throwing around money and doing all the things, you know, it's not like that anymore. So there needs to be a real internal look at prioritization. What's really important to you? Is it the money? Is it the, you know, remote work, the hybrid work? Is it the location? Is it the company culture? Is it the exactly what you're doing and the fulfillment that you get from your job? There needs to be a really big prioritization in a job seeker's mind on what's going to give at the end of the day. So I think it's a mutual coming together from both standpoints to meet together.
Okay. Great segment into what I wanted to ask next is exactly that. You work with individuals that look for a new job, and you work with companies that look for a certain individual.
Right.
When we take it from the individual, and not necessarily what they tell you initially, but what you sense after speaking with them, finding out more about what they're looking for, what is the majority of people really looking for of what you just mentioned, right? Is it the culture of the company? Is it the work-life balance? Is it the type of work I'm going to do that's going to fulfill me? Is it the money? It's okay if that's what it is, but really interested to know, what is it truly, what's the majority of people really's main reason why they want to leave, right? Oftentimes we think, you know, the grass is greener on the other side. I'm not sure it's greener, it's different, but I'm not sure it's greener in most cases. But interesting to hear from you, when you talk to those people, what's the main reason people want to leave or look for a new job? What are they looking in this new job? What's the main one there?
Yeah, this has also been a shift. You know, before it was really money motivated for a long time. You know, people would move for a couple dollars an hour more. But what I see now is a dedication from people like, I want to be happy. I want to feel fulfilled. And, you know, people say that, but I don't think they necessarily always know what that means. You know, they don't know what they don't know, or they don't know what they really want. So that's when we really have to dig into, okay, what does happy mean? What does happy feel? Like, what things have you done in your career that made you feel fulfilled, that made you feel I call them your core desired feelings? You know, are you feeling impactful? Are you feeling connected? Are you feeling valued and supported? So, you know, really digging into those feelings of what you want and then driving decisions from there. And it's great. People are being picky. Even in this economy, it's kind of crazy, but people are being very picky. Like, I didn't feel good about this company, so I'm not going to move forward. I think that's wonderful, because at the end of the day, isn't that the goal for everybody? Just to feel good. So I'm super happy that that's kind of the trajectory things are going down.
Two more questions. So one to this and then one totally different one. But yeah. So when you say the happy, right? I mean, we hear this too when we talk to people that we hire that comes on my staff. It's just happy. But actually, frankly, what I oftentimes get the feeling after talking to these individuals, they can't really tell me what makes them happy, right? It seems it's become a little bit of a better word than saying money. It's I want to be happy, because it sounds better. And maybe I'm making this up, but that's the impression I sometimes get. They don't want to say, no, money is really what makes me happy, which I don't think that's truly the case, but I can't judge this on somebody. But what do you really feel it really is? What makes this quote unquote happy? Again, is it the culture? Is it a combination? It's probably a combination of a lot of things. But again, interesting to hear from you as we look forward. What are the trends? What are people really looking for? What are the two or three components that make up this term happy?
You know, I don't know if I can tell you two or three. I think it's very individualized. You know, different things resonate with different people. But what's important is people knowing what that is first. So, you know, there are individuals that feel fulfilled and happy when you're doing more technical problem solving, innovative work. There are other people that feel happy when they're impacting others and growing people and mentoring, you know. So it's really about getting in tune to yourself and, okay, what makes me happy? So generally, when I work with people, we're looking at, okay, what are the 3 to 5 things and those feelings that, ooh, happy, because you're totally right. Happy is such a general word. You need to be able to really hone in on that.
Yeah. Okay, very good. It's been very exciting, very interesting, again, from the, as we reimagine this mobility space from the human capital side and your experience in this. So then last question, Ashley, has nothing to do with human capital. What's going to be the next car you buy and why?
Yes, okay. I prepared for this. So
prepared for this. All right. It's going to be the best answer ever then.
Well, kind of. Okay, so here's my Ashley La La Land I would love. So the new Range Rover looks amazing, the hybrid Range Rover. It's beautiful. The air suspension, like the ride that I haven't personally ridden it, but I've watched videos of it, looks pretty sweet. A little bit on the pricey side. So right now I'm actually looking at the new Kia. New fully electric Kia. I'm a mom, so I have little ones. So the third row is super important to me. I also like that it's like super fast charging, because I don't have a lot of time on my hands either. So that's what I'm going to be scoping out coming up.
All right. You definitely prepare for that question very well. So maybe I have to find a new end of podcast event question here. Very good. Thank you so much, Ashley, for your time, for your insight. Very interesting on the, again, ever so and ever more so important going forward, human capital side of the mobility space. Thank you so much.